This is a strange story. A strange story. But it's a strange story with all kinds of avenues and apertures and entry points if we would take the time and the humility to journey there. We hear this word transfigured. That's not the kind of word we use every day. That's a kind of special word we might think. Yet if you have either seen the movies or read the book, the series of books, you know that that popular series, Harry Potter, uses this word. Wouldn't you believe it? All of the students at Hogwarts are required to take a class in transfiguration. You know, whether it's turning flowers into candles or teacups into rats or whatever, they have to learn the art of transfiguration. I'm not quite sure that's the way we're using it today, but it's not an unheard of word. And even in our popular life and public life, we think of the word transfiguration in a slightly different way. And if I use this term, you might have a sense of what it might be pointing to. There are all kinds of shows on television now that talk about extreme makeovers. Isn't that true? Well, you can kind of do it, get it to yourself, cosmetic surgery and all kinds of things, and you are, in a sense, transfigured. Or you might be able to get it done to your house, made over and maybe flipped if that's what you're into. Makeovers all over the place. Transfigurations here, transfigurations there, it seems like. There's some who also use a term, reinventing themselves, or not pleased necessarily with the image they project, either by the way they look or the name they have. And we have seen that in the history of Hollywood, and it continues even to this day. Here are some that I thought I would share with you. Do you know who LaRouska Shikne is? Lawrence Harvey. Didn't kind of like what that name projected, so transfigured into another name. Or Isur Danielovich Densky. Do you know who that famous Hollywood blockbuster star is? Kirk Douglas. Didn't quite like how that name portrayed what he was able to do, so transfigured into another name. Francis Gum. Somewhere over the rainbow. Judy Garland. Archibald Leach. Cary Grant. Isn't that great? Aaron Schwalt. Red Buttons. Now you'll know this one. Marion Morrison. Well, Pilgrim. John Wayne, that's right. Didn't quite like how those names and that image conveyed themselves to others, so needed a little bit of transfiguration, so it might seem. So we are not unfamiliar with the whole concept, in a sense, of moving, metamorphizing, which is what the Greek word that translates transfigure is, metamorphosis. We're not unfamiliar with that sort of movement. But you and I know that here we are dealing with something a little different. It is not that we want to say that Jesus changed from one state into another, or that Jesus is going through some kind of cosmetological makeover or change in name. But something happened on that mountain that disclosed. So the notion of transfiguration in this context is an unveiling. So we have to pay attention not only to what is said in this text, but how it is said. And it is said by using language, code language, that if you are students of the Hebrew Bible and the tradition of the time, you know that there are messages to be gotten here. Firstly, we're given the first clue at the beginning. After 6 days. What comes after 6 days? The seventh day. The seventh day is Sabbath, Shabbat. An invitation to worship. It is within the context of worship. We're told throughout Scripture that Jesus kept the habit of meeting for worship in synagogue, of worshiping and praying with his disciples. So this, we're told at the outset, is within the context of worship. Well, good for us, because here we are in the context of worship. What else could happen to surprise us today? After 6 days. And we're told also that they go to a mountain, a mountaintop. And we know that that is a signal for theophany, or other words, in the Bible, whenever we read about mountains and people going on mountains, we are told that there's a disclosure to be received and apprehended. There's something to experience. So the mountain means God is in the air, nearby. Pay attention. Wake up. Listen up. And to add to that, we're also told that there are other figures from history. Elijah and Moses. Symbols of the law and of the prophets. And the story that Kay read to us this morning from from Exodus reminds us that Moses goes up a mountain to receive the commands of God, and he doesn't know how long he's going to be there. And he's there for, guess how long? 6 days, and receives it on the seventh. So all kinds of connections start to be made, and we are invited to have our spiritual sensitivities, have the language of our soul and the yearnings of our being come awake, because something is going to happen. Are you ready? Are you ready? So, here they are, the context of worship, in a venue where God is expected, in a disposition that renders them vulnerable to something new. And what is it that is disclosed? What is shared with them? We're told that Jesus' own appearance is transfigured. His garments, because you don't have language to use here, his garments are like the sun. And what this may be pointing to is that the true essence of God in Jesus is open for a moment. Picture this. You're standing on the bank of a lake, and you're looking out over the lake, and the sun is shining. What do you see on the lake? What do you see? When you look out on a lake, the sun is shining, what do you see? That's right, the shimmering and reflection of the sun. But now picture this. A cloud comes over and it shields for a moment the sun. And now you look at the lake, and what do you see? You see beneath the surface of the lake. You may see some fish, or you may see some seaweed, some weed. You may see other kinds of things that are not available to your sight while the sun is out. But it is there. It's just you can't see it. The conditions have to be just right. We're told that a cloud comes over this place. And in that moment, revelation is made of the true essence of Jesus. And in case the disciples didn't get it and we don't get it, a voice accompanies that disclosure and says, "This is my beloved son. This is the one I am really pleased with." So that we, like those three disciples, have an opportunity to receive something new. Now, even saying that perhaps may not seem convincing. But if you picture, for instance, that Jesus' life is like a highway. Tom Long uses this illustration, and I like it. It's like a highway along which you and I are given signs that speak and confirm who this Jesus is. Well, the first sign along the highway would be Jesus' birth. Now, we know at the very outset that there's something special about this Jesus, don't we? All the fuss is made, attempts to kill. We've just gone through those stories a little over a month ago. And as we travel along the highway, there's another sign that points to the identity of Jesus. It has to do with his baptism. And at his baptism, what is it that we hear coming out of the voice, the dove that lights on him? What do we hear? "This is my beloved son, in whom I am well pleased." We travel along a little further, and here we come to the transfiguration. And the transfiguration is another signpost that begins to tell us something about this Jesus. So the repetition is made. "This is my beloved son in whom I am well pleased," that we heard on the occasion of his baptism. Except there's something additional included. Listen to him. Did you hear that? Listen to him. Pay attention. And the word "listen" here is not the kind of casual thing. You know, when you're either working or at home, you know how we have multiple sources of noise around us, right? Television may be on, you're doing stuff at the computer, somebody is calling you on the telephone. I'm just amazed how some of the kids today concentrate on anything. They've got all kinds of things coming in. The word here is not just casual listening. The word is hearken. And we don't use that. It's from Middle English. But it means to both listen and obey. So you not only pay attention, but you do what is being commanded of you and what's being asked of you. Listen and obey. The last sign that we haven't come there yet that we will see is the crucifixion and resurrection that points to something about this Jesus. But let's stay with the transfiguration. And let me share, perhaps I can use this illustration. The recent violence in Kenya has really, really disturbed me, like all of you, I'm sure. But many of you know that I have a connection with Kenya, that spent almost half a year there in ministry with the Presbyterian Church of East Africa some time ago. And those places that are named, I feel and shudder when I read them in the news and see them online or on television, because those are places where I was, where I preached, where I taught in schools, where I traveled. Eldoret and Naivasha and Nairobi and these places. I feel that. And even then, I recognize in the stories historically that were told of the tribal violence and the things that were happening. And so that comes close to home. But there's an experience that I've shared with this congregation before. Perhaps some have forgotten and others might never have heard it. And it has to do with one trip that I had taken north of Nairobi. I was based in Thika and I went to a community called Chogoria. And in Chogoria, I was invited to speak at a school, a Christian-run school for girls. And after the lesson, it was the last lesson of the day, and they stayed after and wanted to ask a lot of questions about me, about faith, about Canada, about the Caribbean, all kinds. And we got talking and just ignored the time, didn't realize how late it was. And all of a sudden, when the time was finished, we had to go out, and it was dark. When I was there, it was light, but it was now dark. And I'm thinking I have to make my way by foot back to the compound where I was staying. That was an enclosed compound. All I had with me, I didn't have a flashlight. All I had with me was my camera. The old type camera. This old school here with the flash on the top that you kind of could detach. So I got it out of my bag and I charged it up, and you know you could do a test flash burst. And as I walked and stumbled on the rocky terrain, I could not see. It was not a moonlit night. I was stumbling along, and for a brief moment, there was a flash. A flash. And in that moment, and in that flash, I could see ahead a little bit of the terrain where I needed to go. I can't tell you how relieved I was to get near the gate. But that wasn't the worst of my worries, because as I approached and was making these flashes, those who were hired to guard the perimeter were alerted. You may have heard in the news reports about Kenya that some of the people are being killed by chopping and shooting, and others by poison arrows. Have you heard that? These particularly skilled guards were those that use poison arrows. And as I'm making my way, I didn't even hear them coming. Appeared out of nowhere. Stop! I couldn't resist. I used my flash again. And there I saw arrows and bow drawn at me. And I, in my halting Swahili, trying to explain, I was just teaching, I'm making my way, I stay here, I'm not trying to break in. Able to convince them I was safe in the compound. But what I remember from that is the fear that gripped me and the sense of feeling really lost. And that was abated by that flash of light. Because for a moment, I knew that I was no longer lost, that I could find my way. That brief disclosure of the identity of Jesus, of the mission of Jesus, is important for you and for me. And this is why. And here, as we say in the tradition, African-American tradition, we're coming home now. We're almost there. Imagine, would you imagine with me how much this meant to those disciples? Because what is happening is that they are being given a glimpse of the affirmation of Jesus' life and message, because what will come is going to be perilous. But they're given the assurance that no matter what will come, this is the chosen one of God, and this is the way God has chosen in order to bless the world. And trials will come. Difficulties will come. We're told that they're afraid. And what they're afraid of perhaps is just that injunction. Listen to him. Do what he tells you. Love your enemies. Heal the sick. Go after the lepers and those who are outcast. Be available to God to do radical things that are going to disrupt the status quo. And you're going to be persecuted. But blessed are you who are persecuted in my name for. They're afraid. But they are assured. And what we see is in the life of Peter, James, and John, they went through their own transfiguration as time went along. They were afraid, they knew all of those things, but they're also the ones that rose to be the leaders of the church after Jesus was resurrected and ascended. They went through their transfiguration. And so that is the good news to you and to me. So picture this now. Read into the text. And after 6 days, Jesus took with him not only Peter, James, and John, but Troy and Euchena and Carlene and Norm and Len. All of you took with him all of us to give us a glimpse of who he really is, so that when our trials come, when our sickness comes, when our loss comes, when our betrayal by someone we loved and trusted comes, when the loss of health and job, when all of that comes, we are gifted with this glimpse of glory. Stay the course and trust God, for it is worth it. And we receive our own transfiguration. The voice from the cloud says, listen to him. Listen to his peace. Listen to his assurance. Listen to his command. Listen to the ethical implications of what it means to follow Christ. Listen to him. Did you hear that? Amen.